Hey, everybody. We had an awesome response to our first t-shirts that we threw out there into the Election College store. And guess what? Many of you asked for logo t-shirts. So we are proud to announce that we have new Election College t-shirts.
Yeah, we've got the logo t-shirt out there for you at electioncollege.com/store. Of course, that's going to be in the show notes as well. We think it would be awesome if you were just out repping the Election College shirt, and when people are like, hey, what does that mean? You can tell them about your favorite podcast, and then after that, tell them all about Election College as well. Election College, episode 153, Benjamin Franklin, the president that never was president.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, if you ask a lot of people on the streets who their favorite president was, or who a president they know is, if they don't mention George Washington, a lot of people mention Benjamin Franklin, which is like a problem because he wasn't the president.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. Unless you're from Pennsylvania. I mean, he was president of Pennsylvania there for a while, but
yeah,
I don't think people mean that.
No.
When they say that,
not,
I think they're
not in whole.
Yeah, they're just being dumb.
So, pretty crazy guy. I mean, right? He is around for his lifetime, and in his lifetime does more than most of us ever have dreamed of doing in our lifetimes. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay. So Benjamin Franklin was one of like 1,000 kids sired from Josiah Franklin, but actually he was born in 1706 and he was one of 17 kids. And just to get the record straight about his dad, Josiah, he was married twice, and his first wife gave birth to 7 kids. And then to his second wife, who was Benjamin Franklin's mother, Abia, he was one of 10. So he was the 15th kid of Josiah. Whoa.
That's a lot of brothers and sisters.
I can't imagine. I mean, I know some people who have some big families, but
you have to imagine that by the time he was born, and many families, of course, of this size, by the time the, you know, 15th kid was born, the other ones are like having families of their own or very near to having families of their own. So that's a large spread to have children in that age range. But hey,
yeah.
So Josiah Franklin he became a Puritan in the 1670s. And of course, we're familiar with the Puritan movement, and they come over from England to get away from Anglicanism and the Roman Catholic religion in general. And well, we're not going to go too deep into all the Puritan kind of stuff, but we will talk about the fact that that is the way that Ben Franklin was raised. He was raised as a Puritan. He was raised with a very religious background, and it was super important to his father and the rest of their family.
Yeah. So Josiah wanted Ben to be a member of the clergy, but they only had enough money to send Ben to school for a couple of years. And he went to the Boston Latin School. He didn't graduate, but he was a voracious reader. I mean, the kid could read, and he read and read and read. And keep in mind that Franklin ended his formal schooling when he was 10 years old. So he goes to work for his dad, and a couple of years after that, he becomes an apprentice to his brother, James, who is a printer. And by the time Ben is 15 years old, James had founded the New England Courant, and that was the first independent newspaper in the colonies.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So Ben wanted to write for his brother's publication, the paper, and he wasn't allowed to. And part of that was because, hey, it's my little brother. He's not going to write for my paper. So he adopts the pseudonym, and you've probably heard it or seen it, of Silence Duguid. And sometimes that's even used as a joke in pop culture these days. But he adopts Silence Duguid and she's a middle-aged widow woman, or at least that's how he presents her. And he starts sending letters to the paper. And his brother picks up the letters and says, hey, I should publish these in the paper. I think I'm going to do that. And it becomes this huge subject of conversation around town. And nobody is any the wiser that this has been doing this. So James eventually finds out. And needless to say, he's a little bit unhappy with little brother Ben.
Yeah, I mean, that's horrible that a little brother would be smarter than his older brother. No, seriously, though, Franklin, I mean, by the time he is, what, in his late teens, he's this big time advocate of, hey, freedom of the press, free speech. And, well, James gets thrown into jail because he published some material that was not very flattering for the governor. And young Benjamin Franklin, he takes over the newspaper. And so under the pseudonym of Mrs. Duguid, she proclaims that, quote, without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. And Franklin leaves his apprenticeship shortly thereafter, and it's without his brother's permission. I wonder if he viewed his brother almost like a father figure in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. And so old Benjamin Franklin, he becomes a fugitive. He leaves. He heads off to Philly. And if you've ever read Benjamin Franklin's biography or autobiography, you should, because he really goes into a lot of detail about what it's like to travel from Boston to Philadelphia at the time. It's pretty crazy.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. You didn't just walk to Philly. You took a boat and, you know, you may or may not make it.
So when he goes to Philadelphia, he's like, hey, I think I'll start working here doing what I know. I'll be a printer. And he starts looking around at the different printing shops in town. And he's like, I'm too good for all these printing shops, or something like that, he thought. So he does end up taking up a job at a printing house. And then soon thereafter, he gets contacted by the governor of Pennsylvania, Sir William Keith, to go over to London. And he wants him to go over there to get some equipment that they would need to build another newspaper in Philadelphia. Well, he gets there and Sir William Keith decides, yeah, I think I'm going to back out of doing this whole newspaper thing. I changed my mind. Maybe the money was too expensive. Maybe it just didn't work out in his life plan. So Franklin is like, well, I'm here in London, so I might as well get a job.
Yeah, he becomes a typesetter in a printer shop, which, hey, that sounds like a good profession for Franklin since he's got a little bit of experience doing this. And he's there in the Smithfield area, or what is known now as the Smithfield area of London. And he's there for about 3 years. He comes back to Philadelphia in 1726. And Thomas Denham, who is a merchant, employs Franklin as a clerk, a shopkeeper, and a bookkeeper in his business.
So the next year, Ben Franklin, he's about 21 years old at this point, he creates a group called the Junto. And they're a group of like-minded, aspiring artisans and tradesmen who hope to improve themselves while they improve their community. And so, of course, you know, this is like a discussion group for different issues that are going on, and a way to kind of get together with other like-minded people. And he actually models this after the coffee houses in England. And, you know, he had just spent some time there. So he comes back. He's like, hey, there's nowhere cool here to do things like what I want to do. And so he really looks at this as kind of a new way to spread a certain mindset. And so if you're part of this organization or you're part of this group, reading is a huge pastime. And the problem is printing is still pretty new. So books are pretty rare. And when you can find them, they're not cheap. So the members of the Junto get together. They create this library. They, you know, pull together all their resources and everything, and that starts the Library Company of Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's like Ben Franklin is the original hipster.
I think that would be accurate.
He's like He's the king of the hipster movement, and he probably would not have admitted that he was a hipster, just like any good hipster would. But anyway, so yeah, Franklin, we all know this, right? That he came up with the idea of a subscription library, and wow, we have this awesome library company of Philadelphia, and it's still in existence. I mean, if you're smart and you want to become a member of the, I think it's called the Philadelphia Free Library, you can do that even to this day.
Well, I would do that if I was smart, but according to you, I can't do it unless I'm smart.
I think you need to be a smart hipster, and Ben, I think that both of us don't match a couple of those qualifications.
We're not one of those things, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm a hipster. Would you rather be smart or a hipster?
I think smart would, I guess they're not mutually exclusive necessarily, but
yeah. Well, Ben Franklin was both.
Right. So a couple years later, Franklin returns to his former trade. In 1728, he goes back and starts the Pennsylvania Gazette. He doesn't start it. He becomes the publisher of the Pennsylvania Gazette. And this is a way for him to basically air all his grievances and kind of get the word out about what he likes and doesn't like about local reforms and initiatives. And, you know, he can write an essay about whatever he wants to write about. And he starts to gain a lot of respect from the community. They start seeing, oh, Benjamin Franklin. We know that name. We like the stuff he writes, or at least it's salacious, so we should read it.
Yeah. So in 1732, Ben, our friend, Ben Franklin, not you, Ben.
Right,
but
right.
The Ben we're talking about. He publishes a German language newspaper that only lasts a year because, guess what? Four other people decide to create German papers that end up dominating the market. And he's smart, so he goes over to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where, well, there's a lot of German immigrants, and we know them as Pennsylvania Dutch. While he's there, he publishes a pamphlet about the changing demographics and how things are going to change. They're going to change in the upcoming decades and centuries in North America. It could be quite possible that, well, guess what? The colonies will have a bigger population than England.
Yeah, and this is kind of making some waves for him, and later on doesn't help him out a ton. But Franklin actually, at this point, kind of sees the printing press as a way to instill morals into people and to instruct the colonies about how they should act and live. And we start to see, you know, some more of that moralism and ideas that I talked about briefly with the Puritan ideals that he was raised with coming through. And he's, you know, still doesn't quite come out and say exactly what he believes or doesn't believe, but he continues on with the printing business and, you know, the Pennsylvania Gazette. It's not like the best paper in the entire world, but the good parts about it are that it's publishing things that a lot of people in the colonies have never had the opportunity to read. They want to read more things that are secular instead of sacred, and it's an opportunity for them to do so. And of course, he gets to interject his own opinions in there whenever he wants about anything he wants, and Ben Franklin was a big fan of that.
Yeah, probably the big thing to come out of this is that out of his printing business and finding some success in developing, a lot of his success comes out of that, you know, publishing the secular literature, is that he creates this intercolonial network of newspapers. And all the way from the Carolinas up to New England, you know, you've got some connections going on. And this was a time where communication wasn't that great among the colonies. And as far south as Charleston, South Carolina, which, by the way, a woman was the printer for the Charleston paper, which was pretty much a big deal in the 1730s. This network of newspapers has this thing where they're reporting on political debates, and they are pretty neutral, and they're encouraging public debate. And things start to rise up because guess what? the colonies have their own identity, and it's not necessarily that of Great Britain.
It gets a little bit sticky in the years to come. So back a little bit, Ben Franklin becomes a Mason, and this is important because it plays a big part in his life later, but he becomes a Mason and he becomes Grandmaster in 1734. He actually publishes a book in America. It's the first Mason's book to be published in America, called James Anderson's Constitutions of the Freemasons. In 1723, when he's 17 years old, he proposes to Deborah Reed. She's 15 years old, and he's actually boarding there in their house. Remember, he's going over to London for Sir William Keith, the governor, and they're like, so do you like our daughter? And he's like, yeah, I want to marry her. And they're like, whoa. No, you don't. You're just a kid. You don't have any money. You're getting ready to go to London. Let's not do that. So he doesn't marry her. She marries a man named John Rogers. This is a really bad decision. She runs off and things are bad for her. She's not allowed to remarry. So he decides, well, I'm going to marry her anyway, even though it's illegal and it's impossible. So they have a common law marriage, and Deborah Reed Franklin, as she becomes, finds out that Ben Franklin has an illegitimate son named William, whose mother was actually never known or never announced to anyone out of respect for her and the son.
So Deborah and Ben have two children together. They have Francis Folger Franklin, which Frankie did not live to be more than, about 3 years old. He passed away of smallpox. And then there was Sally, who lived to an old age. But William Franklin, kind of an interesting story about him. He was a loyalist, and we can get more into his life in the next episode. We talk a little bit more about the Revolutionary War, Benjamin Franklin. But William Franklin, he was raised in the house. Deborah really raised William as a member of the house, as one of her own. And we'll get into a little bit more of his life in the next episode, where we talk about the Revolutionary War era, Benjamin Franklin. But what you need to know is William and Sally and Frankie, as he was known, were the three children of the house.
So I mentioned the Poor Richard's Almanac a little bit earlier, and you've probably seen the Poor Richard's Almanacs around, and you hear about them occasionally and see quotes out of them. But in 1733, Franklin decides, hey, I'm going to publish this book, and I'm going to make some content up, and I'm going to borrow some content, and I'm going to call it Poor Richard's Almanac and call myself Richard Saunders. And of course, that's a pseudonym for himself. And like I said earlier, people start to realize his writing style and realize, oh, this is probably Ben Franklin writing this, but we'll pretend like it's this Poor Richard guy because it's a lot more fun. So you've probably heard a penny saved is a penny earned, which actually is a misquote from the original. It's a penny saved is two pence dear, and fish and visitors stink in 3 days. Lots of different things that Ben Franklin said, and the way that a lot of the different customs and ideas that we have now are very much traceable to the Poor Richard's Almanac. So he starts bringing in a good bit of money from this because he's selling like 10,000 copies a year, and it keeps growing and growing and growing. And then he starts publishing monthly magazines. He starts doing all sorts of different things with publishing, and he just becomes really prolific in the area. So it's quite the reputation he's got.
So, Ben, we've talked a lot about him being a printer and using that in politics and to influence people. And, guess what? Benjamin Franklin, he invented a lot of things, too. He invented electricity. No, he didn't. He didn't invent electricity, but he was pretty intrigued by what happened in the clouds, you know? He's like, there's something going on there. And, of course, he flew the kite, right? Mm-hmm. And yep. That's what he did. He figured it out that lightning is electricity. And he flies the kite in the storm. And a lot of other people around the world found out that they could do the same, and they ended up electrocuting themselves and some people perishing in the experiments. But old Benjamin, he was pretty smart. He made sure that he studied it and he knew what being grounded meant. And he used some of what he learned in his experiments to develop different things to help prevent storm damage, like, well, having your house burned down because of an electric storm. So he invented what we know as the lightning rod, and he saved a lot of mischief. And the reason I say mischief is because he was talking about a rod that had been installed, and he said that would not these pointed rods probably draw the electric fire silently out of a cloud before it came nigh enough to strike, thereby secure us from the most and sudden and terrible mischief. And that's mischief with an exclamation point. But anyway, he has these lightning rods installed all over the place, including the University of Pennsylvania and, of course, the Pennsylvania State House, which we all affectionately know as Independence Hall.
Right. So he also does lots of other stuff, discovers, you know, everything there is to discover at the time, I think.
Even the TV, he probably invented the internet. Too.
He probably did. So Ben Franklin continues to be really influential. He learns and begins to study and teach people about the science of population studies, or demography, as it's known officially. And this becomes hugely important for many reasons, such as our census. And if you've ever tried to start a business and would like to submit a plan to a lender, you need a population study. So these kind of things are, you know, affecting us still today.
And there's other things that he was interested in. Of course, anytime you're throwing a kite up into the clouds and letting lightning strike it and so on, you're going to be interested in some other things, including the wave theory of light, which is way above my head. But just know that he was thinking about these things, and he was thinking about meteorology and the whole concept of a jet stream with the Atlantic Ocean, and how why is it that, London is placed pretty high up on the globe compared to, let's say, Philadelphia? It's way up there, but the weather's kind of the same. And, well, go figure. He was interested in that type of thing. So, and I would imagine him going back and forth between Europe and North America. He wanted to know why ships would arrive into one port much faster than another port. And it all had to do with the ocean currents and so on. So he was studying a lot of those things.
Definitely crazy. Crazy guy. Crazy in a good way. I mean, you know, how the hip kids say it these days. He also, I don't know that he created the pro and con list, but he definitely was one to popularize it, because he wrote out how exactly he made it work. And I'm relatively certain that all of us at one point or another have at least done a mental pro and con list, if not actually written one out. So there's another one, if in case electricity, which is what is enabling you to listen to this episode, in case that wasn't enough for you, he also did the pro and con list thing. So there you go.
That's pretty good for this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty much what you need to center your New Year's resolution around. I mean, Ben Franklin, use electricity and come up with a pro and con list, and go where the jet stream takes you. So, Ben, we've talked a lot about the earlier life of Ben Franklin. He, of course, was a musician and he played chess, too. But then he was also a politician. So in the next episode, we will be talking about Ben Franklin and his political activities. Did want to give a shout out to everybody who has been awesome this past week on social media. We've had a lot of fun interactions with you guys. And just to remind you, we are on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Election College. And of course, we're on iTunes as well. And Ben can tell you how long it takes to leave a review.
496 milliseconds. or something That's like awesome. That. I don't know how long it really is, but we think you should take the time to do it. It won't take you long at all. Leave us a little review and a star rating. We're getting pretty close to 100 reviews now, so that's mighty impressive, if you ask me. Mighty impressive for you guys, not for us. We didn't do any of that work, but you did. So thank you for that. You can go over to electioncollege.com/review, or you can just go straight into iTunes, into your app, whatever it is you do. Leave us a review somewhere, somehow, some way.
Yeah, and we will see you on Thursday for our last episode of 2016.